Abby, I am going to set a boundary with you now.
Okay, go ahead.
Do you mind if I ask you, you know the cable I mentioned that would be really good if you had that for the podcast so that the internet is better quality? I would be so happy. It would mean a lot to me if you would consider getting that. That would be nice. Thank you so much.
Is that a boundary?
I don't think it's phrased as one. Do you hate me now for bringing it up?
Yeah, I still hate you. Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Help Hole. You are listening to the Help Hole podcast, our eighth episode number 8.
Where we read self-help books and we tell you all about the things we learn from them.
I would love a bit of an update, actually, Abby, because this is our 8th episode number 8. Has your life changed at all since we started doing the podcast?
Yeah, I think it's almost like silly to make a list of the things I've gotten out of doing this podcast so far. It seemed gratuitous, but a lot of things I learned from this podcast have really been helping me. I like started moving towards more of the things that I'm afraid of since we read The War of Art. I started working on my hour of comedy. I've done 2 work in progress shows already for that.
It's so good, by the way. I feel like I have the privilege of getting some recordings sent over. And it's going to be such a good show.
I'm not sure, but I'm excited about
Don't.
Okay, I'll try some self-compassion here and be like, yeah, it might be a really good show. It might actually be a really good show eventually. Okay. From Atomic Habits, I've been putting more habits into my life by really sticking to the don't skip twice rule, which has really helped. That it's okay if you don't do everything perfect. It's okay if you don't do it every day, but try not to skip twice in a row. So I've been running and rowing a half an hour most days.
Really?
And sometimes I don't. And if I don't, the next day I really try to. This has been going great. I tried to do the exact habit that you laid out for me and it wasn't quite right. So I'm still working on the exact habit that makes it more consistent. But the don't skip twice thing is really working for me.
That's so exciting.
And from that book, one of my like bad habits, right? There are no bad habits. There's just whatever. But one thing that I used to do all the time whenever I didn't have a show and I stayed home is I would like stay up really late and like eat candy and chips and do all the things I didn't let my kids do before they went to bed, like then alone. And now I've been brushing my teeth when my kids go to bed with them, which is like cute and nice. And then I don't eat a bunch of junk afterwards.
Yeah, because then it tastes bad.
Yeah, and it doesn't even feel like a rule. Yeah. It doesn't feel like I'm being hard on myself. I'm just like, my teeth are brushed. What are you going to do about it? Ugh.
I love that.
Yeah. And then really, I think the biggest ones that have made a difference for me are the self-compassion episode and when things fall apart, like connected to that. I was trying after the self-compassion one to just try out being nicer to myself, like to be kinder. And I could tell that it was working and that I liked it, but I still had this hesitation that was like, but what is the point for the world if I'm just going to be like nice and cushy to myself? I'm not going to get any better and I need to be hard on myself. And then from when things fall apart, there was this whole part about how actually being gentle and honest and kind to yourself is how you become gentler and more honest and kind to other people. And that then I was like, oh, then I do deserve it, actually, and I must do it. And that has actually radicalized the way that I am trying to relate to myself. And I really think it's helping me. I loved that one. How about you, Sophie? Has anything changed in your life since starting this podcast? Are you better now?
I think so. I had a conversation with a friend the other day where she started talking about the Love is Blind cast.
Ooh.
And she was being really mean about the women on the show. And I said, oh, but if we judge these women harshly for not making amazing decisions, I think we'll also judge ourselves harshly when we don't make amazing decisions. And if we had empathy and compassion for them instead, maybe we'd have more compassion for ourselves. And I thought, I think our podcast is making me a really unbearable person to be.
I gotta say,
what an annoying thing to say.
Sophie, it's a good thing that you already started out an unbearable person to be around. So I think it's fine. Nobody can tell the difference. I feel like this is so in my head. We're working on this stuff. We're thinking about it all the time that I really have to like choose who I'm talking about it around. Some of my friends listen to the podcast and know that I'm really like into this stuff and talking about it and thinking about it a lot. And those people like want to talk about it. And then some people I have to be like, oh my God, I cannot actually quote the podcast I am on about self-compassion in this situation right now. But it's also like that thing where it's like when you're learning something and you're excited about it and you're new to it, you have this like beginner attitude where you want to tell everyone what you figured out and you want to teach everyone about it. Like you almost always end up looking like a fucking idiot. Just like such a dummy afterwards.
It's that, oh, what's the word for that thing where when you are, is it bias?
Confirmation bias?
I don't know if it's the same thing, but whenever I read a book, I feel like suddenly every single thing that happens around me has a lot to do with that.
Yeah.
And I found it with the book we're talking about today. I just see how boundaries is a thing in every single conversation I have. Every time someone is like, oh, I have a problem with this, I'm like, aha, it's a boundary problem. And I had the same thing when I read Self-Compassion. I was like, well, let me tell you about the self-compassion. I even did it with flirtology. Mm. I was like, well, do you know what would help you? Flirting. Help hole. I'm so excited to tell you about the joy of being selfish, and I will. But first, I'm just going to do our usual disclaimer. So background information, I listen to a podcast called All Killer, No Filler with comedians Kiri Pritchard-McLean and Rachel Fairbairn. And it's a very good true crime podcast. And they have a disclaimer in the beginning of their episodes. And because I've heard that maybe hundreds of times, I deliver our disclaimer in the same way as they deliver theirs. And I'm very aware of it. But if people aren't listening to both podcasts, they won't be aware of it. Sorry. Here's our usual disclaimer. Just to say, we can't do this podcast without these books that people have spent years researching and writing, and there is usually always value in reading an entire book rather than just a summary. So do go support the authors and buy the books. This is not a review podcast. We love books like these and just like talking about them. And even if you don't like what we have to say about the books, buy them anyway because we might be wrong.
Yeah. Help. Okay, tell me about the book, Sophie.
So this week I've read Michelle Elman's The Joy of Being Selfish because I recently did this question box in my Instagram stories where I asked people, like, what's your favorite self-help book? And I then wrote down every single book that people recommended and, like, wrote down how many people mentioned each book. And the third most popular self-help book on the list was Michelle's book. So I was like, okay, I've got to read that. And the first two books were Untamed by Glennon Doyle. And the other one was How to Keep House While Drowning by Casey Davis. Both quite famous self-help books that we'll definitely cover.
Oh, I haven't read either of those, but Glennon Doyle is married to Abby Wambach, who everybody thinks I am sometimes, which kind of means Untamed is probably, it's all about me.
I think so. I'm getting a bit tired of people saying, wow, you're doing a podcast with Abby Wambach. I'm like, no. They're like, the two-time Olympic gold medalist? And I'm like, no. No, Abby Wambach, the open mic comedian who dresses up as an orange on stage.
And I really hate having to correct people when they're like, oh, you're doing a podcast with Sophie Hagen, the famous comedian and author? And I'm like, no, Sophie Hagen, the fucking jerk.
I don't know why. It's not a Brooklyn accent that you get whenever you're doing a weird voice.
I don't know. It just comes
out of me. Is that Brooklyn?
No, it's...
It feels American.
I think it's like 1920s mobster. I don't know what it is.
Oh, okay.
But it comes out a lot.
I like it.
Stop deflecting.
Fucking joke.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. The book we are talking about today, The Joy of Being Selfish. The subtitle is Why You Need Boundaries and How to Set Them. Michelle Elman is a life coach and a content creator and has sort of been declared by the internet as the queen of boundaries because she's really fucking good at it. And a little side note, I feel like full disclosure, She's also a friend of mine. But don't worry, not so much of a friend that I can't be honest about the book. Abby, talk to me about boundaries.
Wait 1 second. My kid just got home and I needed to tell her to be quiet.
I had the podcast today.
What we're witnessing now is a perfect example of boundary setting. We're experiencing Abby Wambao setting a boundary with her child, asking her to be quiet. She just asked the child to set a boundary with the dog and said, "Don't let him eat the poop," which I think is one of the most important boundaries you can possibly set. And now what we're hearing is just Abby having a fun time, potentially having forgotten she's in the middle of doing a podcast. Help, ho, help, ho, help, ho. You've just shown us that you have a great relationship with setting boundaries.
Really? Did I do good?
Do not eat the poop. What's your relationship with boundaries?
I think they're mixed. I think I'm getting better at being able to tell when I need to set a boundary and when I need to, like, say no to things. I think it's, like, for me, it's, like, about saying no to things that I'm asked to do or invited to do. I never want to say no, or I don't never want to say no, but my impulse is to try to make things work, which I don't think is a bad impulse, actually. And I think that's, like, a thing that kind of comes up for me around boundary setting. I think, like, I have, like, this sort of, like, I have a boundary on boundaries, which is that I also had this experience when I was in high school and my family was, like, going through a hard time and my parents were getting divorced. My mom was really doing the best that she could, but she, while she was doing that, she read a book about boundaries. And I think it was probably very helpful for her. But at the time, while she was figuring out how to use them, she was practicing on me because I was still living at home with her and I did not know what was going on. And probably some of the stuff that I didn't understand was, like, a fair boundary. But also I remember an incident where it was, like, less of a boundary and more of, like, a tripwire. There are things where I, like, didn't know there was a boundary and then I would pass it and I would be, like, punished and I'd be like, what is going on? My uncle helped her move a couch and then I got in trouble when I got home because I hadn't ever offered to move the couch. It was like a thing where he had been thoughtful about, like, oh, do you want, would, like, we could just do that now. And she was sort of in this place where she felt, like, walked on. And that was, like, a clear example of a time where she felt like she wasn't getting that from me. Anyway, that was in the time of the
Yeah, it's that thing of, I think, part of what is in the book is that you have to kind of, you have to ask for, you have to state your boundary, otherwise people don't know it's there.
Yes, and I think my mom figured that out, and she really was working hard at it. That is not a typical thing that she does, but I really remember it as connected to the boundary book. And we worked out that situation, and it was fine, but it was just like, what the, like, what? Like, I hated that book. I hated the idea of it. And still, even, like, 20 years later, I think there's a part of me when, like, boundaries come up, I feel like it's, I worry that it's, like, a protective measure that doesn't always make sense. But I'm looking, I'm curious, I'm really curious about this book.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to you about this. I mean, I also struggle to recognize where my boundaries are. But then when I do recognize them, I'm also bad at setting them. I'm just really bad at everything to do with boundaries.
One thing is, like, right, because I want to say yes and I want to make things go smoothly and whatever. One thing that really helped me notice a boundary thing in a positive way and helped me set them is having kids, that I had to then say no to things. And I could also, I used them sometimes when they were little as, like, a way to excuse myself from things that I felt the impulse to say yes to, but, like, shouldn't or didn't want to do. And that really helped me practice, like, noticing where that was, noticing when I did that, and then, like, doing it more honestly moving forward when I wanted to say no to things. But the extreme I had to go to was that somebody else was eating up all my time and energy, so I couldn't give it to you anymore.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to read the book. I think that's it. I'm okay with boundaries, but having a kid to get it, nah.
You don't want to have a kid to get boundaries? Okay.
Nah. That's where I set a boundary, is by having kids. I'm very bad when people do overstep a boundary. That's also really hard for me because I'm just like, oh, I set the thing. It makes me doubt that if what I said was the right thing to say, if they then don't do it or do the thing I asked them not to do, I'm like, okay, well, maybe I was wrong then. Maybe they're right to do the thing. But really, since I read this book last week, I'm getting better at it. I'm not amazing at it yet, but So remember the thing I told you, literally 3 seconds ago about the Love is Blind cast and saying the thing about self-compassion to my friend?
Yeah.
So that was actually a vague attempt at a boundary. I think what I should have said would be something like, I don't like it when you talk about women like that. It makes me feel bad and I don't like the energy. And I would like for you to not talk about other women like that in front of me. It makes me feel sick. Saying that sentence would... Ugh. So instead I was like, I wonder if when we talk about women in a negative way, we judge ourselves. I made it an us thing. And I wonder instead of
But why is that wrong though? Because if you had said it that way, if you had said that way to me, I would have felt shut down and ostracized from that conversation. And if instead you said it that way that you just said it, I wonder if I've been thinking lately about whether if when we talk about them like this, then we're also talking about ourselves, I would have felt included in that and would have had the same thought. Why is that wrong?
I don't know if it's necessarily wrong, but I feel I think it's a good start. And if she hears that and goes, oh, I get it, we're not going to talk about women like that, that's fine. It's the job has been done. Yeah. No one got hurt. But if she comes back and is like, oh, these stupid women, then what? I can't keep saying, oh, I wonder if maybe it's a bad... at some point I will have to say, listen, I don't like this. I think that's where we're at. We're at the point where you have to set the boundary, right? Okay. Where it's like... Oh, I've already hinted, already tried to say, when we do this, I wonder if it's a bad thing. But now we're in a fictitious situation, a future situation where she hasn't picked up on the fact that that was what I was saying.
Okay.
And now I have to say it. I don't like it. Yeah. Please stop. And I just can't, it makes me feel sick, but I'm trying.
Yeah.
So I've already learned loads. And now I'm going to tell you about some highlights. I've got so many quotes from this book. So much to say. Okay, so first of all, within the realm of why we should set boundaries, that's the first sort of topic of discussion. The first quote is, I think one of the most loving things you can do for the people around you is to take care of yourself. When you don't, the people in your life often feel a responsibility to do that duty for you.
Hmm.
And that blew my mind. Because it's true, right? If you are constantly saying, oh, I don't know, it's up to you. Whatever you want to do, whatever you think about, yeah, sure. At some point, if you have a friend like that or someone in your life who's just never telling you what they want or what they need, you end up trying to figure that out yourself, right? You're like, okay, if every time you speak to someone and you're like, what should we have for dinner? And they're like, whatever you want, you end up being like, okay, have they ever said that they don't like pizza or could I suggest pizza? Because you don't trust that they're going to be honest and upfront about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's I never thought about how not setting boundaries could actually negatively affect a relationship, because then the other person will have to do it for you.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think I know that feeling, that side of the feeling very much. When I feel like someone isn't going to say what they need and I'm just then constantly guessing. I think maybe right at the beginning of this book and this conversation, I need to, in my mind, separate adult relationships from parent-child relationships, because I can already feel something bubbling inside of me that is no. that it's no, your children don't feel a responsibility to do that for you.
Some what do level you mean?
That in my partnership with my partner, we have this conversation because he often exerts himself beyond a point where he should have said no. And then he's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then eventually he'll snap and I'll be like, why didn't you just say no back there? And that is like a thing that comes up. And that totally makes sense. But when I'm hearing these things, whenever we talk about boundaries, I feel like the parent side of me being like, there are things in a parent-child relationship you can do to set a boundary. There are things that you need to do, but it is not the same. And I think, like, because it's such a relationship that's central to my life, I'm reading all of these quotes as a parent, and I don't think that is going to be a productive conversation.
I know nothing about kids in that relationship, but there must be some crossovers, right? Because, like, we literally just heard you set a boundary when you went to, your kid came home from school and you went in and you were like, you can watch TV but do it with headphones on because I'm recording. That's a boundary.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge part of parenting, figuring out setting boundaries and whatever. It's just, you also have to always make the choice to cross them for the health and safety of your family, like, constantly. You have a boundary that's an ideal. I'm coming off 2 weeks of sick children right now. And and like the idea that I could have any boundary, like about how much rest I get or how much alone time or how I need to work or how I need to do anything, I don't want that to color this whole conversation.
I see what you mean.
I'm like, boundaries aren't real because I'm a parent. But I also know that that's not what we're talking about. But I do feel like maybe it needs to be said that that's a thing I'm turning off on my brain. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Or say it out loud and then we can talk about it. Because I do think it's fascinating to figure out, like, what is a... Because I feel like with what you talked about, what you've experienced in your past, it feels like there was some trigger in this for you.
Yeah.
And that could be interesting to talk about as well. Because I think boundaries are so triggering to so many people. Because, and this is like a big thing, when I read this in the book, I was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
And the quote is, if boundaries are set correctly, they're often laid down out of love and respect for the relationship and a desire to keep it healthy and sustainable. And it kind of blew my mind that boundaries aren't punishments.
Yeah.
Because in my head, it's a punishment. I'm punishing you for, you know, you've said something bad about women on the television and now I'm going to punish you by telling you that I don't like, you know, but trying to reframe that as, I want us to continue being friends and I want us to continue having a nice, good relationship. And for that to happen, you need to know what's happening inside of me because you want what's best for me and I want what's best for you. So if you tell me that something is bothering you that I'm doing, I would like to stop doing it. Yeah. So I'm actually grateful that you will tell me that. Do you know what I mean? And I don't think a lot of people are used to thinking about it in that way.
Yeah, and definitely, and that, like, definitely I feel like I'm like, you can't just have what you, I like, maybe you can, I can't have what I need. So it's really interesting for me to have this look at, like, because I think I am a little bit on the other side. I feel like I give a lot of myself. And then when there's, like, this conversation, like, what other people need, I kind of feel like there's this urge I have to throw my hands up in the air and be like, okay, then you get what you need and I'll keep not getting what I need, when that's not the real choice.
And if people love you, they don't want that.
Yeah.
Like, if people truly, I've had another thing I've kept saying to my two friends this week after reading the book was this thing of, when people struggle to set boundaries, I'm like, yeah, but what I've learned from the book is, if people love you, they want to know what you are thinking and feeling so that they can make sure that you are happy.
Yeah.
So that if you set a boundary and someone is upset and angry, that's not a nice person to be around. And in the book, she also talks about how, in like the extreme example, if you're like an extreme people pleaser, narcissists will pounce on you. Narcissists can smell that shit miles away.
Hmm.
They can smell, oh, here's, I think she refers to it as an endless fountain of giving. I mean, I think there must be something in between that, right? That's the extremity of someone who is an endless fountain of giving and then a narcissist taking advantage. But I think there are versions of that in healthier relationships where if it's the norm that this person will always just give and never say stop, I think you can even, without wanting to, end up taking more than is healthy for the relationship.
I just also think there's something where it's like, you can't lay a boundary when there's no space. right now, my kids truly were like homesick. One of them was home for 8 days in a row, 8 school days. So like then there was also the weekend, and my partner took off the first day it happened because I had some work stuff and my kid was up all night puking and I was up with him. But then he like goes to an office. He's a physical therapist. He like works in a place with people. And I'm a stand-up comedian and a writer and a podcast. So I'm the one with the job that has flexibility for me to stay up in the middle of the night and do things and for me to like kind of push my stuff, and it just gets pushed. And he's doing as much as he can when he comes home and like taking care of them. And then I'm going off and trying to do my stuff from like 5 to 9. My boundary was crossed, right? Like, or like what I needed, what didn't exist. What I needed was like someone else to a third parent in our family, because he couldn't step into the thing that I needed. I just had to like keep digging underneath what was there. At one point, we had like a 45-minute conversation where I had to acknowledge that like he couldn't give me the thing that I needed, which was to not be like sleep deprived and caring for someone at all times and trying to do my work like while a child was on my lap. He couldn't give me that. He was already like giving as much as he could. It's a draw. Like, we just, there's no boundary that will help us in this situation. I mean, it was helpful to even just have a conversation about it and know that there wasn't going to be a solution. But it was just like, I am digging from the bottom of the well and there's nothing there anymore. But I just have to keep going.
So from what I have understood, a boundary isn't making someone else do something. It is about letting them know where your boundary is and then what happens if they cross it. So I don't think in that situation, I don't know if that counts as a boundary, because as you say, it's like out of his control, right? Yeah. So I'm learning as we go as well, because I think it's so difficult to wrap my head around this. But I think in theory, you could say, I think we sometimes can have boundaries that other people are just incapable of not crossing. You know, and in a completely separate situation, it could be, I need you to be on time. I need you to be on time because that makes me feel seen and heard, and like, I don't want you to waste my time, right? But you could be a person who is chronically late, and that could be for whatever reason. It could be that you're just a selfish, horrible person. It could also be because you have ADHD, or like things happen in your life because things are chaotic. I can then look at that and be like, okay, but I need you to be on time because it's way too triggering for me if you're not. In that case, you can't give me what I need. And then we're just not compatible as friends or whatever that relationship is. And that's also fine. You know, that doesn't mean that someone's a bad guy or someone is, you know, neither of us are bad people. I just need this thing and you can't give it to me. And I think in relationships, I think some of those rules get bent all the time. And I think that's what you have to do if you... Even just living with someone, you have to bend some rules every once in a while. You can't have, I don't think you can have the same kinds of boundaries when you live with someone, or like you have to constantly go on some kind of compromise. But there is a point where you go, and that is my boundary, and now we no longer fit together, right?
What if this was like you picking this book and doing this was like your way of dumping me as your friend?
I'm just saying, I need you to have the cable plugged into your computer, or we are not compatible.
Actually, boundaries aren't about making other people do things, Sophie.
That is true. So what I am letting you know is that you need to get the cable. And if at some point you continuously don't get the cable, I'm going to have to make some hard decisions.
Wow. Do you know what?
See, I know it sounds horrible, doesn't it?
Sounds horrible because I got to get the cable. Help hole. I walked outside the other day and my son was standing there and then falling backwards and then standing there and falling backwards and catching himself. And I said to him...
What do you mean catching himself?
Like he was like going like he was going to fall over and then catching himself.
Oh, okay.
And then I said, what are you doing? What are you doing? And he goes, oh, I'm doing trust falls. And I was like, What? Oh my God. And then he was just like, he fell all the way over and was laying on the ground, like not in an unsafe way. He was laying on the ground and he goes, I was doing trust falls. Nobody caught me, so I don't trust anybody. And I said, oh, but you have to tell people you're trying to trust them for them to catch you. And I think that's what a boundary is, huh? You have to tell them what you need from them before they can fail you.
That is so true. It feels like one of those anecdotes that start a self-help book, right? That goes, and that's why this first chapter is going to be about this thing. Like, that's such a good example. You have to tell people. That's the thing. I think I do that so much where I go, ooh, I would really love it if this person would do this thing now. And then I'm just hoping. And then every time they don't do it, I'm like, oh, I really just wish they would. And then at some point, they like look at me weird and I'm like, I guess I hate this person now. Because I'm noticing it a lot at the moment of when I feel really angry with someone, it is because I can't set the boundary.
Oh.
It's because they've done something and I haven't. Like my friend with the Love is Blind cast, if I'm completely honest, it's been a thing for a decade of her saying something and then me thinking, oh God, I wish I could say that I don't like this. So now when she says something negative about someone, I'm like inside of myself, I'm exploding, just like, I hate this.
Okay.
But the anger isn't with her. It's with me being unable to tell her. And if I told her, she'd be fine with it. Well, I hope she'd be fine with it. I'm going to read two tiny quotes from this. The intention behind a boundary is to know the difference between me and you. Boundaries mean we are separate humans. I think for some people that might sound like a given, but I think for me that feels like permission to have my own needs and wants and preferences. Because it's like, oh, I think I go through the world trying to adjust myself to others. And then when I can't, I apologize. And I'm like, you know, if someone is like, well, what should we have for dinner? And I say pizza and they go, oh, I don't like pizza. I'm like, I'm so sorry. I never should have suggested pizza. How do you let me know what you like. And they're like, whatever, vegan food. And I'm like, ugh, I'm so sorry, but I don't like, I shouldn't have to apologize because we are two separate people. We can't all be the same person. We're meant to be different. We're meant to like different things. And a relationship is about going, what do you like? What do I like? Let's hope we like the same things so we can have dinner together. Are you like, oh, I already knew this?
I think it's really helpful in certain situations, the apologizing thing, where you like don't have to apologize for having a different want or need. I think that makes so much sense and is like really applicable to me. And I just finished reading a book on Buddhism, which is like, drop the sense of self and we're all the same person. So I'm like trying to hold both things in my mind. And I'm like, okay, I can see how this is useful the way that it's useful. And that's the point of this podcast, right? And us reading these books is to use these things when they make sense to use.
Yeah.
It does feel like it is like a hat to wear in circumstances and in others. Gosh, wow, isn't compromise great?
I also think this book, The Joy of Being Selfish, and the book we read 2 weeks ago, When Things Fall Apart, I think it's attacking two separate elements of a person. I think When Things Fall Apart was more like talking about how to make the ego less, where The Joy of Being Selfish is for someone who has no ego at all. Like, you need a sense of self. You do need some boundaries because you need to be able to tell what you like and what you don't like so you can say, stop treating me badly.
Yeah.
I think if you're somewhere in the middle of that, that's fine.
Yeah.
And I think maybe ego is the wrong word. So Michelle herself has said about the book that it's written for extreme people pleasers.
Uh-huh.
So I think if you're already fine with boundaries,
yeah. This
might not be for you. I think that's the constant fear, isn't it, of going, oh, but what if I, you know, it's called The Joy of Being Selfish. And when I first saw the title, I thought, oh, I don't like that. Like, I don't like
that we
call boundaries selfish. But then, of course, that is the whole fucking point. Like, of course, that's the point of it. The point is, when we set boundaries, we feel selfish. What we're learning about this is that it's not actually selfish because you are helping others by having these boundaries. Like, if you're having dinner with a friend, you want them to enjoy the food because you love the person. So you don't want them to just go, okay, and then hate the food you're eating. You are helping them by saying, I don't like these things.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember if we've mentioned this on the podcast before. Have we talked about when we make decisions, you and me, and how we rate the importance of them?
I don't know if we've talked about that on here. Go ahead.
So when we try to make decisions, we go, I think we should do this thing, and it matters to me 6 out of 10. And then the other person goes, oh, I don't think we should do that. To me, that matters 8 out of 10. Because then we can go, okay, well, then we're not doing it because that means more to you than it does to me. And I feel like that is boundaries, right? Because when I say, and that matters 10 out of 10, I feel like that's me saying boundary.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you'll go, okay. And I think if we reached a point where we both said that something mattered at 10 and we disagreed on it, that would be quite a much bigger conversation than any other time where it's been very clear that one of us has had a preference for something.
Yeah.
I feel like that feels like a boundary. And that feels like compromising, where it's like, well, I can compromise about things when they don't matter that much.
Yes.
But if I'm vegan and you want to take me to a steakhouse, that's a clear boundary.
Yeah.
And that's not something I can compromise with. But if you're like, I prefer Thai food to pizza, but sure, I'll have pizza, that's not a boundary.
Yeah, okay. That makes a lot of sense. And also, it's something where in a real close relationship, I feel like these are boundaries for people you don't relate to very closely, maybe. Or maybe that's a thing I could think about it like that for. I'm just thinking about, like, my partner, like, did Dry January last year, and then he didn't drink all year. And there was, like, a couple times when I was, like, he wasn't becoming sober or anything. He just wasn't drinking. Where I would be like, do you want to have a bottle of wine? Like, is that something you want to do? And he'd just be like, no. It never had to be a boundary. It never had to be like, I don't want you to keep asking me that. Because I could tell that he was, like, doing something good and he didn't want to keep being pushed on it. And we don't have to explicitly say all these things because we have, like, a pretty healthy relationship where we trust each other. Then maybe, like, setting explicit boundaries like this, it's for situations where generally you would like this information kind of to be implicit. You would like them to sort of read it from you and be like, I can tell that Sophie doesn't like it when I talk shit on the Love is Blind cast. Oh, I'm going to maybe change the way I'm talking because Sophie looks like a little taken aback or whatever. And when it doesn't, like when someone doesn't adjust their behavior from reading cues, it is your responsibility, it's our responsibility to give them the opportunity to meet our expectations by telling them what our expectations are.
I think that there are a lot of people who can't even send the cues. Mm-hmm. And that is the situation where you need to learn how to show it or speak up about it. Because
mm-hmm.
I can very easily imagine relationships where one person would be like, come on, drink a bottle of wine, please drink. And the other person needing to be able to say, I need you to stop asking me that.
Yeah.
Because it's annoying, or like, it makes me feel weird about my decision or whatever. And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with the word healthy relationship.
Yeah.
I think this is often for people who have not yet learned how to be in healthy relations or how to truly exist as a whole person within a relation. And I think that can be very close. Like, this is one of the tools that Michelle lists. And the tool is to say and feel, I guess, this is your shame, it doesn't belong to me. Or like, this is your feeling, it doesn't belong to me. And the example she gives is that she worked with a woman who was getting married. And the woman's mother would always be like, oh, I hope you're not ashamed to be walking down the aisle at her size. Like, if it was me, I would be so ashamed of being your size when I'm walking down the aisle. And then this woman had to say, that's your feeling, not mine. You would be ashamed to walk down the aisle. I am not ashamed to walk down the aisle. And that's a mother-daughter relationship. That's like as close as you can possibly get.
Yeah.
And even in that situation, it's necessary to be like, oh, hang on, here's a boundary. Stop talking about my body. I think that's very normal as well, especially with mothers and daughters. that's a boundary a lot of people have to set all the time, to be like, stop talking about my body because I don't like it. And I think a lot of mothers feel so, I guess parents in general, feel quite enmeshed. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe not a lot. Maybe I'm now being biased. I think it's a thing that can happen, that parents can become enmeshed with their children.
Yeah.
And then the children will have to grow up and be like, okay, stop. We're two separate people. We're not the same person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really hard because at one point you are the same person. and then it's really close to being the same person for a really long time. And it is like, it's just harder than I imagined it would be to like extract yourself from taking on your kids' mistakes and joys and accomplishments as your own and like really letting them, I mean, especially with mistakes, like if you see your kid doing something that you think is a mistake, to let them have it is like, oh, it's so hard. And what you think is a mistake is like based on the way that you were, you know.
I remember growing up thinking, like whenever I would watch TV shows where the teenager would say like, fuck you, mom, and then slam the door, that would give me such anxiety. I never, ever rebelled. I did, not against my mother. I never shouted at her. I never slammed a door. I never told her to like, you know, oh, can you knock? Ever. And it's always been like a thing of like, oh, that just means, you know, we've had a great relationship. And we do. But it also means I was, because the reason I didn't do it was because I was scared of hurting her.
Yeah.
And if that exists in a relation, that's not healthy, because sometimes you do need your space. And sometimes your mother does annoy you and you have to say, oh, shut up, mom. And what I would do instead was I would just suppress the need to like, please knock on my door, suppress the need to say, you know, stop commenting on, have I cleaned my room today? And that then, of course, trickles down into the rest of my life of being like, so sorry for having needs. I don't want to upset you.
Well, good news is my kids feel very comfortable telling me to fuck off. So I'm doing great.
It's genuine. I know you're saying a funny thing and you're laughing, but that is so true. That's my therapist once said that we tend to see like the quiet kids as like, oh, the kids that never speak up, they're the good ones. And she was like, absolutely not. Like sometimes you need to look more at the kids who are afraid to make sounds. And I was like, yep. So how to set boundaries, right? So when I think of setting a boundary, in my head, it sounds aggressive. It sounds like an angry, combative thing to say. I was talking to a friend about him setting boundaries, and I said, oh, you should set a boundary now, because I read the book, so that's all I'm saying. And he said, oh, but I can't just say, well, fuck you, I'm not. And I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That we both think, well, I can't say fuck you, because that's how I interpret boundaries. It's like, that's a fuck you.
Yeah.
So the way Michelle describes it is like, you should set a boundary in the same tone as when someone needs to ask you what your number is. You know, oh, by the way, what's your phone number? And you go, oh, it's 07, whatever. It's the same tone, because it's not a combative. It's not, you're not starting an argument. You're just saying, oh, I don't like it when we talk like that. And it's so hard for me. It's so hard for me to not turn that around in my head as something that's aggression.
Yeah.
But to say it in a neutral, a factual, not emotional way, that is the way to go about it.
I'm noticing from you describing this, the earliest tool I developed instead of just saying a boundary like a phone number, which I'm sure you have too, which is jokes, that I guide people towards what I think is okay and what I don't think is okay by teasing them, and then by getting that joke stronger and stronger until they can't be ignored, which, you know, upon reflection, I don't think I really do this anymore, but certainly in high school and maybe college, that was the primary mode of boundary setting.
I think it's fine to do that. I think it's, you don't have to say, this is my boundary and you shall not cross it. Like, I think you can do it. But I think there are moments where you have to.
Yeah.
Again, it's the thing about picking up on the signs and do they know you? And I also think some people like to push. You hear a boundary and then you're like, yeah, well, that doesn't suit me. So I'm just going to, you know, people who are late in particular, late people are, they're some of the worst people. And I don't mean people who are like, because they have ADHD. I'm talking about people who are just late because it's, I don't know why they're late. I don't know why. I don't know why when they are then late, they don't feel bad. I just don't understand it. But I think with those people in particular, I often see that happen where they're like, ha ha ha, oh, you know me. And it's like, no, I don't know you. Like, I'm not accepting this as a thing because I've just sat for 45 minutes waiting.
I've been a late person. So I wouldn't keep you waiting 45 minutes. I'm often 3 minutes late, exactly 3 minutes late. I feel terrible about it. I'm very sorry to everyone. Sorry to you, Sophie. Sorry to everybody. Sophie, we were just talking about taking an airplane together. And Sophie was like, I don't know, you're probably late to the airport. And I was like, well, I'm pretty on time, I think.
See, this is what I do, right? If we fly to Denmark together when you're in London and I need to go to Denmark the next week, so if we end up on the same plane, I will need to do some internal work to not be stressed on your behalf. Like, I'll be at the airport 2 hours before and I'll be like, oh no, what if Abby doesn't make it? And that's when I have to do that tool of going, that's not your feeling. You're at the airport. You're fine. Like, it doesn't affect me if you miss the plane. We don't need to be there at the same time. You can get another plane. I think this is what some people be like, I'm just an empath. No, you're not. You have unhealthy boundaries. For me, that was me going, you're probably late to the airport. That was me protecting future self from like not being stressed on your behalf.
If you're listening to this thinking like, oh, I'm not going to travel with Abby. Abby's probably late to the airport. I'm not late to the airport. I'm on time to the airport. I'm just not one of these freaks who needs to be at the airport the day before the flight. I'm just not one of them.
I think more people would think I'm not going to travel with Sophie. I can't deal with that pressure of someone being like, are you up? Are you awake now? Have you gotten on the train yet? Have you checked your trains? I've checked the train times for you. Do you need to send a car? I'll send a car.
You know what's nice, though, I think about like getting to really know you and getting closer to you? There was a situation like a month ago where I knew it was going to stress me out to try to figure out all the logistics, and it was going to stress you out to not have me figure out the logistics fast enough. And because I knew those things, it didn't even feel like overstretching for me to be like, you actually can go ahead, Sophie, and figure out my logistics for me because you need that in a way that I don't right now. And that was really helpful.
It was so nice to get that permission. It was so nice to get to try and plan an entire trip for someone else. Just like, give me the addresses and I'll figure it out. Oh, it was so good. I could have made a whole spreadsheet just like,
but it was also
this
like,
is when you need to be there.
My impulse was be like, I have to figure all this out now so that it doesn't stress out you. And that was actually the big deal for me to be like, no, you can, if you need to figure it out now, that I totally understand, but I can't. And then you can. And then it was like, oh gosh, this is great. And actually we figured out the thing really fast and got an answer to our problem because we let each other do the thing that we needed to do. I thought it was great.
And also, I think there was a very, like, we found out that in the end it couldn't happen. And that was because we were both quite upfront about, like, what we were both capable and willing to do.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you were a completely different person, you could have been a person who said, okay, I guess I'll try and make this happen, which would have required you to be on a train for 12 hours.
Yeah.
And super stressed. And it would have ruined your entire weekend.
I was so close to doing it. I literally had to be like, this really doesn't have make sense. I am not a person who would do that, but only by a tiny bit.
I think that tiny bit is very healthy. I set a boundary with some friends, no longer my friends. That's a different story. Read my book. But I had to travel to another country with two people who are constantly late and enjoys it. Oh, the plane is in half an hour. I guess I'll go take a shower. And we tried to travel to another country together before, and it was the most stressed I've ever been because it was literally like they were ordering food when the speakers at the airport was like, final call, final call.
Oh, gosh.
Like, get to the gate, like saying our actual names. I just couldn't. Like, my nerves were all over the place. So then the next time we had to travel to a different country, I was like, I will get there on my own. So even though we were traveling from literally the same street to the same hotel in a different country, I went by myself on my own plane. like on my own, you know,
on my own plane,
on a plane by my own.
My wow, private Sophie, jet. Forget the environment. Yeah. You've got a boundary.
So that was like, that's a nice compromise where both people get to do, and also they missed the plane and had to take another one. So
no
I wasn't completely
way.
Wrong. I think boundaries don't have to be like a bam, bam, bam. Like, I am setting a rule and this is very serious. I think we can say it as a joke as long as the other person listens. But I guess it becomes a bit mucky when the other person doesn't listen and you have to make it clear.
Yeah.
And I think also if it's a family relationship, right, which you've had for decades, it's harder because, you know, my friend with the Love is Blind cast bitching situation, we've been friends for over a decade. It's really hard for me to suddenly be like, hey, you know that thing that we've both been doing for 10 years? I'm changing now, so can I give you an update on who I am now? Like, that's really weird. The next thing you have to do, if you've come to the point where you have to set a boundary clearly, like, this is my boundary, stop. If you've done that, Michelle says, if they then cross it, you really have to hold the boundary and have some kind of consequence. So if I've said to you, it really bothers me when you're late, I need you to stop being late, and then you are late again, without any big apologies, you know, there are levels of this, right? If you're just like, oh yeah, here I am again, and you're not like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, I know you set the boundary. You know, if you were like super apologetic, fine. But if you just showed up and you're like, whatever, if you weren't there after like 15 minutes and you hadn't sent a text where you were like, I'm so sorry, I would just have to get up and leave because I had to show you that I do mean it. Like, there is a consequence to this. I think that's where it gets really hard, especially if, like, that's where I want to go. Okay, then never mind. I guess you can just be late then. And within that, I want to read this quote from Michelle. You are entering unknown and unfamiliar territory, and it's okay to feel uncomfortable. You are not used to boundaries, and you are unaccustomed to the reactions that people will have. Similarly, they will be unaccustomed to you standing up for yourself. And that reminds me of what I think I've said many times before already on this podcast, which is this thing my therapist said, that when you start saying no and you start standing up for yourself, people will be upset because they think it's personal to them and that you're suddenly angry with them. And that's okay. They just have to get used to, like, this is who you are now. And that all progress is like 2 steps forward, 1 step back. Like, it's hard to change. And it's going to be difficult in the beginning. But I think as long as you expect that, it makes it easier.
I think I have a thing that comes up with having to set a consequence. What you say about, like, leaving if you've been there for 15 minutes, like, if there's a natural consequence, I think that it's the right thing to do it and not to, like, walk all over yourself by waiting for someone who's not coming or something. But the idea of, like, creating a consequence that isn't there, and maybe that's not what she's saying, but that doesn't seem like fair to yourself either.
No, I think it's more like, say if I set a boundary with my friend and I said, I really don't like it when you talk about women like that. Can you stop talking about women like that? It makes me uncomfortable. And then she does it again. And then I'll be like, okay, you're doing that thing again. And I really don't like it. If you do it again, it's affecting our friendship. And I can't see myself continuing our friendship if you keep doing the thing I'm asking you not to do. And then if she does it again, I have to end the friendship. I know that sounds extreme, but it's like the basic thing in a friendship is to not disrespect each other's boundaries, not cross each other's boundaries. So it's not like a punishment to her. It is, I am now feeling uncomfortable in this relation. I feel unheard and I feel dismissed. So for my own safety, I am walking away. It's not to punish you. I have a really bad phobia. It's so bad I can't say the words because then I will throw up. And I have had to say in friendships, you can't mention this word, you can't do this thing, because for my own, like, physical and mental health, I will have to walk away. Otherwise, I will throw up on your body. That has nothing to do with, like, setting a boundary because I need to stand up for myself. Yeah. That is just because I don't want to throw up.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean by that consequence.
But I think that's the right thing to do if that feels like the right thing to do. I think that creating a structure where that is the right thing to do because it's the right thing to do is wrong. I feel like your friend talking about women that way, but gossip, I think, truly if somebody is paying attention to themselves, gossip serves a purpose. People gossip because they are trying to figure out something about themselves and relationships in the world. And if you do it mindlessly, that's not what you're doing. It just like furthers the thing. But the reason like it's fun for me and you to talk about Love is Blind and stuff is because it's the only way you can learn from a relationship that you're not in, is to talk about other people's relationships. So if you create a boundary that is, I don't like it when you talk about women that way, because she was talking about them negatively or whatever. And then you're like, now I must enforce that boundary because you have done it again and again. Then you are choosing this rule about a boundary and about a consequence rather than moving towards closeness with your friend and trying to figure that out. I don't think you would actually do that. I think you would figure it out with your friend and you would only make the choice if it felt like the right thing to do. But I just think it's important to say, like, to choose a consequence yes. because you set a boundary is actually not the right thing. I truly do not think it's the right thing to ever set a consequence just because you set a boundary. I think it's reacting to the actual moment and the actual relationship is the right thing.
What I think comes up for you is what comes up for a lot of people when you talk about boundaries, which is I think we're afraid of it becoming a situation where there is no nuance or mm-hmm. sort of humanity or connection. And I also think that's wrong, right? I think it would be very weird to me if my friend right. was suddenly like, stop saying this thing, and then didn't give a...
Right.
And then the next time I was like, oh, but I accidentally said the thing, and then suddenly she's gone. I think you have to assume that in these situations, you have already had the discussions. You've already, you know, asked and explained, and not that you have to explain your boundaries, but like you've reached a point where this is harmful to you in some way, and it's about standing up for yourself, right? At some point, if someone is like, every time you see them, they like use their fist to like hit you on the shoulder, and it really fucking hurts. You can be like, ha ha ha, yeah, you can make a joke about it, you can ask them to stop. But at some point, if they keep doing it, you can also be like, why do you keep?
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing, no one says you can't be like, why do you feel the need to like punch me on the shoulder? It really hurts. And you explain that it hurts, you know. But at some point, you have to say, if you don't stop punching me on the shoulder, I'm not going to invite you to my home.
Yeah.
I'm not going to see you anymore because it hurts me.
Yeah, my hesitation is just whenever somebody says you must do a consequence, it is a rule a lot of people follow. Like, they follow it in, like, in their relationships. I think you're not trusting yourself in the same way than if you're just following that. I know that you wouldn't do that. I know that that's not what you're saying. But in the book and the thing you just read that you have, it doesn't even say that. It says you, it's important. Well, it says it's important the second time you set the boundary, you include a consequence.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely like a simplified way of putting it. I don't think you should see the book as a rule book.
Yeah.
And like, if you don't do it, then you've done everything wrong. I think it makes sense that if you continue to set a boundary, but nothing happens, then of course the other person is going to continue to cross that boundary because they haven't learned.
But I think it shouldn't be about teaching the person. It should be about protecting yourself. So then you take yourself out of that situation.
True. No, that you are right about that. That I got that one wrong. That's true. But I do see, like, I've had the Love is Blind friend 10 years ago. She was like, her boundary was don't be late. And we had to go to do a very important thing. Not important to her, important to me. And I was late and she left. So I stood and I very last minute had to find someone else to do this extremely important thing. And I was so upset because I was like, yes, if we'd done the numbers thing, her lateness anger would probably have been like an 8 or a 9. But my needing her to come with me to this thing would have been a 10 because it was so important to me. And I was like, it wasn't, and I wasn't like disrespectfully late. I had made a mistake. Like, it was like something that was, I could not have gotten there earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I think in that situation, because she just left and she was like, well, I'm not waiting, I felt really like betrayed because I was like, yeah, but mine is more important.
Mm-hmm.
From your point of view, I think, I would have liked for her to be like, this really hurt me, but for now, yours is more important. But next time I leave, because then I would have been like, okay, I get it. But hers was like almost like a two boundary thing of like, she couldn't wait 5 minutes when, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, if I were just talking to you and this weren't a podcast, I would be like, oh, I'm sure that you will use that rule reasonably. But it's whenever there's stuff like this around, like, boundaries and, like, then you have to hold a consequence. I do feel like it's not what I believe. I think there's a place for it. Yeah, these are absolutely tools that would help me and help anyone when these are the tools you need. And that's what tools are for. They're for, yeah, exactly, for when, yeah, you need the tool.
Yeah, and we always need to have, like, nuance and,
yeah,
life is life. Another tool I got from her that was so useful. She said, I no longer wait for the line to be crossed to set boundaries. Mm. And I was like, oh, that is so smart. Like that thing of preempting it.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that my agent would comment on things that I'd like created with less carefulness than I would have expected. Not expected. I was like, oh, I think if he knew how much his opinion meant to me,
mm-hmm,
he would like, he said, I read your book, and then he was like, and this bit could be good for this thing. And I was like, oh, I don't think he understands that you can't just say, I read your book, and then not say, and I liked it very much, and, yeah, it's very, yeah, good, and you're the best person in the world, and I love you, and this is great, and, like, you're beautiful as well. So he said, like, oh, I read your book, and I think this bit would work for a radio thing. And I remember feeling like, what I should say now is, hey, you can't just not tell me what you think of it. And I thought, okay, well, I can't set that boundary because I'm incapable of doing that. But then the next time I spoke to him, I said, oh, by the way, did you know that your opinion means so much to me? Of all the people who give me their opinions about things I create, yours I listen to a lot. So, like, you're up there. It matters so much what you say. And he was British. He was like, oh. I was like, yeah, it's fine. Like, you know, I just need you to know that. Because I thought, oh, surely from now on, he's like, when he says that he's read something or whatever that I've made, he would then know that that carries weight.
Hmm.
And I felt like that was me trying to preempt. I never had to set the boundary. He should already know that if he says something negative, he hasn't said anything negative about anything, but I'm scared he will, because him saying nothing means I have no worth as a person. What, daddy issues? No. Shut up. But I wouldn't have done that if I hadn't read the book. It wouldn't have been like, oh yeah, maybe I should just preempt this instead of waiting for him to not compliment me and then be like, oh God, he should have complimented me.
I'm really excited to have this information because I am about to start reading your book and we're going to do it in 2 weeks. That's going to be the book. And I know exactly what to say.
I need so many compliments.
Listen, they're coming.
Just here they come. So many compliments.
I'll dress up like your dad.
Do you know what he looks like? I would love to see him.
I'm going to dress up like you with a mustache. So like me with a mustache.
I once made a really hot, what I thought was a really hot Sims in The Sims. And I showed it to my cousin. And she was like, oh, you made your dad. And I was like, oh, God. Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
This is an issue. I think I have issues. Help. Another thing the book says is, if you care too much about how the recipient perceives you when you set your boundaries, the boundaries will automatically be weaker. I can easily set boundaries with people I don't know, right? Because I don't really give a shit. The hardest thing for me is to set boundaries with people I really like, because when I really like them, their opinion of me matters. And then I'm scared that they're going to not like me as much if I start setting boundaries. And that just felt like, oh yeah, good point. So you kind of have to care mostly about your own opinion and not theirs.
Oof.
You have to value your own opinion about yourself higher than other people's. And I think that is easier said than done.
Yeah, that's something I really struggle with. I'm struggling with that with the work in progress on the up for the show, because I have to do a show that isn't ready a lot of times to make it ready. And it feels like I have to value that progress and that process and the show at the end more than I value the opinion of the people in the room right then. And that is like so confronting for me, because they're right there. I could make them happy right now doing what I already know works rather than, yeah, trying something. But that's what I'm there for. And it's really screwing with me right now.
Yeah, it's really, really hard. Help home. All right, I'm going to quote from the book now. Every time you're worried about their reactions, come back to yourself. She says, anytime I have a client who starts worrying how the other person feels, I respond with, what about you? I want you to get in the habit of asking yourself the same thing. Ask yourself, what about me? What do I want? What do I need? What do I feel? And then she says, become more selfish and think about yourself. I still have an issue with the word selfish, but I think it's the point. I think the point is to make me angry about the word selfish. But like, I was in a really shitty relationship, which I've written all about in my book. And he would get really upset whenever I set a boundary. I would be like, oh, you know, you lied to me and that's not okay. And he would be like, oh my God, people just keep saying to me that I lied to them. And it's so hard to hear that. Like, I'm just trying really hard. And I'd be like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Of course you're trying really hard. Like, I didn't mean to make you upset. And that would happen constantly. So I would end up, every time I felt my boundaries being crossed, I would be like, no, never mind. Like, I'm not going to mention it because that just upsets him. It would end up being about him. Like, oh, but if I set this boundary, he will get upset. And I really could have used that voice in my head during this time that would say, but what about you? What about your feelings? And I think that is such a classic example of a relationship where we are incompatible, because what I need, he can give 0% of himself to other people. And I need some. And so I ended up giving 100% and he gave 0 back. And he needed 100% of all people. Like, he couldn't have people like, being their own people. So it was just like, what should have happened was I should have never been in that relationship at all. Instead, I swallowed all of my own feelings. I was like, oh yeah, but I'll be fine. I can do something else. Like, I can, oh, my feelings don't matter because he's sadder than I am hurt, which is also not true. I don't think it's selfish to think about, wait a minute, what do I need? What about my feelings? And then I think, like, when we're talking about stuff within the podcast and we do the whole thing of like, that matters 5 to me and that matters 9 to me, I think that's a perfect way of doing it, because it's like, ah, this is a big feeling, but not as big as yours. So that's a good way of compromising. Where in that situation, it was like, I'm just going to assume that your feelings are always 10 and I'm always 0.
Yeah.
And that's just not how
it is. Really, it works. Also interesting, because that numbers thing really only works when you do trust each other already. Because yeah. It is about like saying the truth about how you feel and acquiescing the floor and being like, okay, yours is more important. But then there's also this thing where I know in a lot of relationships, I trust myself to feel sad, tired, bad, or angry better than the other party. Not even just that I think it will be worse for me. And in some ways, I don't know that that is entirely wrong. I definitely see that, like, it is good for me to push back against it. My partner is really great parent, does like most of the cooking, most of the, like, he gives a lot. So this is not one of those situations where it's another thing that I'm doing as the mother that's just on a heapless pile. But I'm the middle of the night parent. I'm the parent who I'm patient then. I have a lot of compassion in the middle of the night. I catch barf. I wipe tears. I read Frog and Toad. And he is bad in the middle of the night. He's like cranky if he gets woken up. You know, he works on it and whatever. But that means I'm the middle of the night parent, even if I'm tired, because I'm better at being tired. It's something we talk about a lot, and he's really worked on like how that can change when it has to, because like after 5 nights of that or whatever. It's just that there's value in knowing that sometimes you can take the loss, but there's also value in being like, okay, but do I have to really? And is it valuable for me to like ask for what I need? I don't know. Just that a lot of times we take the loss too much without saying what we could use.
What you're describing is just a natural human relationship, right? Where someone gives more sometimes and sometimes others give more other times.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
that's
yeah,
just, the problem happens when it doesn't feel equal.
Yeah.
And when you are not both on the same page with it.
Yeah.
And it then becomes, if he was doing no housework and you were like, please do the dishes.
Yeah,
and he was
yeah,
like,
yeah,
okay, I'll do the dishes. Like that kind of thing. Again, this is not about punishing or like never doing anything for anyone or being like aggressively self-centered. It's about realizing how healthy it is to have a self-focus, not just for yourself, but for others. Like, if something is bothering you and harming you in any kind of way, the people that you have in your life that love you, close to you, that are not your natural-born enemies, they want you to be happy. And it's about figuring out how we can all live. And like, when I had housemates, I would say the worst chore is taking out the trash. I hate it so much. I hate it so much. And I will happily do your dishes or do the shopping or clean the toilet if I never have to take out the trash. So we would just naturally find a solution where they were like, okay, I'll always take out the trash, but I hate cleaning the toilet. And I'd be like, fine, we'll meet in the middle. And it's not that I love doing the cleaning the toilet or that they love taking out the trash, but it's just like finding something in the middle, because we both know what this means to each other, right? Like, that's just...
And I think in like close relationships where you can do that, like that makes total sense. I think what I'm noticing from like thinking about that is that I take on that stuff for people I don't know even more, like even more when I'm not getting something reciprocal, because I know I can like dig a little deeper, work a little later. I can be tired and still nice. Like, I'm not going to be really snappy unless I'm really tired and we're really close. I can maintain what I think is appropriate, and then I make the assumption that I can do that better than other people, so I just take more on my plate rather than be like, actually, this isn't attainable.
And I think we are similar in the way that we can both handle a lot of things. Like, I've maybe snapped at people out of rage or tiredness maybe 4 times in my life. At most, I'll be a bit sneering when I'm, but in like a funny way. I've never been like rageful. I can carry a lot of people's feelings, and I can handle a lot of abuse without ever making a sound. But that is not the same as to say that I should. Right. And that is not the same as to say that in those relationships, that's a healthy thing. It's not that with my shitty sort of ex, I am sure that sometimes boundaries happen at a time when the other person cannot deal with it. And then that's fine. In those situations, I'm fine with letting a boundary be crossed. It comes when it happens consistently and it's no longer healthy and you're not getting... I guess it's almost too late in the podcast to name the word respect, but it does feel a bit like respect, doesn't it?
Mm.
To continuously let someone carry all your burdens for you, or to continuously let someone cross their own boundaries in order to continue in this relationship with you, it feels like disrespectful. And I don't think we necessarily feel like we're people who need respect or who maybe even deserve respect, but maybe we should. There's a whole thing about work boundaries, which is like my favorite thing, but the thing that I have kept mentioning again and again, which is like my new favorite quote in the whole world: a lack of planning on your part does not constitute an emergency on my part. I have had to say this 4 times this week just because people have been like, oh, hey, I know I should have gotten this to you yesterday, but too late. Anyways, the deadline is in an hour. Can you get this back to me before the hour? And I've been like morning coffee, been like, and I've sat there and I've been about to like run into the living room to sit down by the computer and like sort it. And then I've been like, hang on. A lack of planning on your part does not constitute an emergency on my part. And I've just responded and been like, sorry, I will not be able to do that. I had the time yesterday when you were meant to send it over and I didn't receive it. So I won't have time until tomorrow afternoon.
Cool.
And it has felt so good.
Yeah.
And that has spiraled because now I found this app called Boomerang. You can pause your inbox so you only receive emails at certain times. Like in the olden days when you had to log on to the internet and you could only be on...
I thought you were going to say when the mail came and you're like, in the olden days when you...
almost the same, isn't it? Like, but I was thinking like internet times when you had to like dial up internet and it cost like £10 a second. At least
I would love that. I would love to go back.
Right. But that you can do that with this app. I wish we could be sponsored by this app because I'm really bigging it up. But you can like pause your inbox and then be like, I only want to receive emails at 10 a.m., 2 p.m. and 3 p.m. Well, what are people going to do? You didn't get the email yet. And it's like using this app to like set boundaries for myself. And I did that yesterday for the first time. And I have never felt as creative, as calm, as happy as I was before knowing that there were no emails in my inbox. Because if the emails come through, I read them, period. And then I'm stressed because I need to reply then. Abby, this book is like changing, it's changing my life. I'm setting so many boundaries for myself and it feels so healthy. The next thing Michelle said was, I purposely never apologize for the delay. She's talking about emails. You know, when you go, oh, I'm so sorry it took me so long to get back to you. I purposely never apologize for the delay because I do not want to set the expectation that contacting me warrants an immediate response. That is the next step for me. I'm going to try and not do that, but it's really hard for me. But I'm going to try and not do that. I think work boundaries is the easiest thing for me to do. That's why that makes me the most excited.
Work boundaries feel the easiest for me to get on board with, too. I think the family stuff, I do get really like, I'm like, wait a second. I haven't slept for weeks. Like, but with work boundaries, I'm like, yeah, stop sending me those emails, huh? Stop sending me those emails.
Can I play you a message that I sent to Michelle this morning and then what she replied?
I would love that.
Hi, Michelle. Can I ask you a question that we can use on the podcast? We are recording in 45 minutes, but lack of planning on my part does not constitute an emergency on your part. So I'm learning. No worries if not. I just wanted to ask you two things. One, has your relationship with boundaries shifted since you wrote the book? And two, we live in a society that doesn't really love it when people, especially women, set firm boundaries. You know, like women who are super boundaried are seen as, you know, harsh and mean and cold and stuff. So if you meet a new person and you're like, oh, this person doesn't get the boundaries thing yet, do you change your approach? Like, is that sometimes not the better thing to do to kind of, I don't know, appease the situation?
Hello, thank you so much for including my book in your podcast. In regards to your question around, do people perceive me as rude, direct, harsh, aggressive, selfish? Absolutely. And do I change that depending on what scenario I'm in? No, or at least I try not to. Because the problem is, once you make lenience for what culture that person is coming from, or what generation they're coming from, or because it's a work context and not a dating context, or whatever it is, what I find is once you start slipping on your boundaries, dependent on the person you're talking to, you slip on all your boundaries. But do I have times when I fail to set boundaries? Yes. Right now, just for your listeners, I am sitting on a friendship breakup that I have delayed for 2 months, and I have not done it, and I have not done the text for a number of reasons, which I won't go into. But there are times I delay on setting boundaries. But do I always know that is the better choice? Yes. Do I sometimes find it? Am I sometimes a human and find it hard sticking to my own advice and what I know is right? Absolutely. But that's because I'm a human before I'm a life coach. But I never change it depending on the person I'm talking to. The one thing I would say about The Joy of Being Selfish is I wrote it in 2020. I actually got the book deal 3 days before we locked down. The one thing is, I was still relatively new in my boundary journey. I say relatively new. I'd started learning boundaries when I was 21, and I started writing this book when I was 26. So I was 5 years in, but that's still quite fresh. And what happens when you're a people pleaser is, and you start learning boundaries, is you pendulum swing. You go from one extreme to another. And I think I definitely wrote this book from this place. Part of it was conscious, part of it was unconscious. So there are some people who read this book and go, your texts are too harsh, too extreme. And part of me goes, yeah, some of them probably are. But at the same time, I'm including real life texts rather than text examples of word for word what you should say to show you that all of these actual texts I include are texts I sent throughout my imperfect boundary journey. So if I could make one change, I probably would have actually changed them into text templates rather than the literal texts I sent. But then part of me is also like, the majority of the people, or at least who I wrote the book for, is the most extreme people pleaser. So in my mind, if you read the book and you go, whoa, that's too extreme, and you take 50% of it, then at least you will be setting boundaries the right way. If I had already diluted it before putting it in the book to make it more appeasable, the chances if you took 50% of that, then you're not even setting a proper boundary. And anyone who's read The Selfish Romantic will see some of my boundaries in The Selfish Romantic are softer than the boundaries in The Joy of Being Selfish. But that's because I grow as a person, and I can't in hindsight go back and wish I'd changed things about each book that I've written, because they are time capsules of the person who I was when I wrote them. And at the end of the day, if you're coming into it as an extreme people pleaser, I'm okay with you thinking I'm too harsh, I'm too blunt, I'm too direct, I would never send a text like that. As long as you take away 50% of it, you will make a change in your life. Help
home. Thank you to Michelle for sending me that, even though I was very late. The Selfish Romantic, by the way, is Michelle's other book, which is about boundaries and relationships. And I highly recommend you get that too if you like the sound of this.
I really appreciate her talking about how she's evolved since writing the book. I felt like that part really helped me. That totally makes sense. And the idea that you sometimes need to like express the clearest, most extreme version of something to make the impact that you want, that makes sense to me too. And it's just actually just so interesting and nice to hear from somebody who wrote a book like this, because it's so easy to stop thinking of them as people and start thinking of them as experts that you either agree with yeah. or disagree with. That's really interesting and helpful, I think.
Definitely. That was the end of our dive into Michelle Ellman's The Joy of Being Selfish. Use the link in our show notes to go and buy the book if you like what you've heard.
Also, click the Patreon link to become a Patreon. Patreon, which we pronounce Patreon because that's how my mom says it. If you join it, what do you get, Sophie?
You get twice the amount of episodes because the main episodes are bi-weekly and so are our bonus episodes. So if you want weekly episodes from us every Monday, sign up to Patreon now.
If you are listening on Apple Podcasts, you can also subscribe on there to get bonus episodes via that app. Also, please write us a review on there. You write reviews with words on there, and we read them, and we really like them, and we want them. Please do that and rate us on Spotify. Rate us wherever you're listening.
It's a classic thing, isn't it? You hear that in podcasts all the time. People being like, rate and subscribe. But it's the main thing you can do. Like, it's so useful. It tells the whole world that someone likes the podcast. And that means that it is spread into the world and it becomes a bigger podcast. And we can keep doing it.
And our friends who have a podcast, they did a thing where they copied good reviews and put them all in a row. And it looked so nice. And I really want to do it. I really want to do it. So can you write nice reviews, please?
Yes, please. Thank you. We love you very much. We also love our producer, Amanda, our Patreon producers, Lillian Mamawamba, our jingle maker, Nikki Elson, and each other.
Thanks, each other.
Bye.
Bye. Couple.